Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. And we begin today's program with a special message to a listener named Jessica. And this comes from Ray to my partner in crime, to the laughs and joy that old time radio has brought us on so many nights. Happy birthday, Jess. I love you. And again, that message is from Ray. And thank you so much for both Ray and Jessica listening to the podcast. Definitely appreciate it. And a very happy birthday to you, Jess. Our listener support campaign continues. You can support the show on a one-time basis, support.greatdetectives.net, or by using the Zelle app to box13@greatdetectives.net, or by mail to Adam Graham, P.O. Box 15913, Boise, Idaho 83715. Our focus today, though, is on Patreon support, and you can become one of our Patreon supporters for as little as $2 per month at patreon.greatdetectives.net. I want to thank Sheila, Brian, and Greg for becoming our latest Patreon supporters. Sheila became a supporter of the Detective Sergeant level of $7.14 or more per month, and Greg and Brian became supporters at the Rookie level of $2 or more per month. Thank you so much for your support. And a reminder, you can go to patreon.greatdetectives.net and you'll receive a monthly newsletter from me. You'll also get to choose our summer series, as well as provide some insight on various things that we are going to do with the program. There are actually a couple of series I'm thinking of adding to our lineup, and our Patreon supporters will be able to find out about that and let their thoughts be known. Now it's time for today's episode of It's a Crime, Mr. Collins. The original air date, September the 2nd, 1957, and this one is The Fabulous Emerald Necklace.
It's a crime, Mr. Collins.
It surely is. After all, if a girl wears a dazzling necklace worth a fortune, should it make a man want to kiss her or kill her? That was a question I had to ask myself when my husband gave me a very dangerous job to do. Oh, by the way, my husband's Greg Collins, a famous detective. Yes, I'm Gail Collins, and I'll be back in a minute to set the stage for our puzzling crime.
It's a crime, Mr. Collins. And tell me, Gail, what have you called this case?
The Fabulous Emerald Necklace, Mort.
Sounds interesting. Did you wear this fabulous necklace?
No, Mort. The one I wore was a fake.
But there was a genuine necklace.
Oh, sure. It was worth $200,000.
I think you better start telling your story, Gail.
Okay, Mort, I will. The real necklace was a breathtaking collection of precious stones. It belonged to Mrs. David Blaine, a curious young woman without any social background who had somehow managed to marry the heir to the Blaine fortune. Late one night, she and her husband had left the Stardust Club and were strolling to their Park Avenue townhouse, which was just around the corner from the club.
Well, Cora, I don't think you behaved very well at the club.
Will you stop picking on me, David? Don't be so prissy. You've been doing it all evening. I just had a little fun at the club. After all, how square can you get? Really, sometimes
Shut up, Mrs. Blaine. I'm back into that doorway.
What? Who are you?
What's the idea? Get away from
her. I said you two get off the street and into that doorway. I've got a .38 here, and I'll empty it. Right into both of you.
Why, of all...
Go on, into the doorway.
That's it. Now, I'll take that necklace of yours, Mrs. Blaine.
Keep hoodlum. You think you can get away with this just because you're waving that gun? Why,
That's it, Mrs. Blaine. I'll take the necklace. Thank you.
Give me that
Take
necklace.
Take your hands off me.
Police! Police!
I told you not to do that. I told you!
Pete! Pete! Come back here, you! David! David! He's dead! He's dead!
The jewel thief disappeared into the night, leaving Mrs. David Blaine hysterical beside the dead body of her husband. Greg and I had been home that night. All we knew about. But the next morning, Greg was sent for by the Sterling Insurance Company. He was in the office of the company executive, George Trent.
I sent for you, Mr. Collins, because this case calls for a man of your caliber. We'll be glad to pay any reasonable fee, of course.
Is this a reasonable case, Mr. Trent?
Well, frankly, it's rather difficult. That's why I'd rather you handle this case than one of our routine investigators. Our company insured Mrs. Blaine's necklace, Mr. Collins.
For how much?
$200,000.
Can Mrs. Blaine describe the man who attacked him?
She's quite vague about it. But something very fascinating came to me in the mail this morning.
Mm-hmm. What is it?
A note from the killer.
A message?
You'll notice, of course, that it's been written very much like a ransom note in a kidnapping. No use of pens, pencils, or typewriters. The letters look like they've been cut out of newspapers and pasted together.
Yeah.
He makes what he believes is a business offer. As you see, he wants $50,000. For that sum, he'll leave the necklace where our company can find it. We return it to Mrs. Blaine and save $150,000. And very wise, too. The thief knows he'd have a difficult time disposing of the pieces through a fence. It's identified too easily.
I see he doesn't mention how he proposes to have you give him the cash. I suppose he'll get in touch with you later.
Exactly. Now, couldn't we trap him by promising to pay off at a certain place and at a certain time?
I doubt it. Nobody would try a swindle like this without planning it very carefully.
Then what do we do?
I'd like to talk to the dead man's wife.
I'll arrange for you to meet Mrs. Blaine. Oh, and you'd better have your guard up. She's very beautiful and very clever. I think of her as a kind of Lucrezia Borgia.
Really?
Especially for one reason.
What's that?
Lucrezia murdered her husband.
I was gallivanting around San Francisco buying play suits for the summer. A very innocent cherub indeed. And that husband of mine was closeted in a private office with Mrs. David Blaine.
Blaine, you say you could hardly see this man who shot your husband.
It was very dark, Mr. Collins. He pushed us away from the lamppost into the doorway. I could just see his shadow.
How tall was the shadow?
Average height. It's very difficult for me to be accurate. I was terribly excited. I didn't notice details.
But if you couldn't see very well, you could hear. How about his voice?
Rather odd, come to think of it. He didn't sound like the usual gangster. It seemed rather cultured.
Is that all the information you can give me?
I'm afraid so. Sorry I'm not being helpful.
Unfortunately, Mrs. Blaine, these cases often lead to our having to ask embarrassing questions, probing into the darker corners of people's lives.
Go right ahead.
Were you getting along well with your husband?
I suppose so. How well do people get along after they've been married quite a while?
I'm not a philosopher, Mrs. Blaine, just a detective. Did you have any reason to believe your husband was, mixed up in any activity he'd rather you didn't know about?
Is that your diplomatic way of saying was there another woman? I don't think so. I don't follow you, Mr. Collins. I wear a necklace, a very expensive one. Some thief holds us up, becomes excited, shoots my husband. You're making a whole French novel out of it.
Because, Mrs. Blaine, very often what looks like a simple hold-up or a salter, what have you, is actually more complicated than it appears. It's often a cover-up for something more deeply motivated.
I'm not a woman of very deep motivation. My interests and desires are normal and obvious. As for my late husband...
Yeah?
David was not a man of many dimensions either.
Just folks, huh? Mm-hmm. With a few $1 million.
You're a detective, Mr. Collins, not a human.
Who collects on your husband's life insurance?
I do.
All of it?
All of it.
How much is that?
About $500,000.
Do you also inherit all his property?
Yes. It's worth another $1.5 million.
We were speaking of motives a while ago. You need an awfully good attorney to get you out of this.
Why, I'm perfectly innocent.
I have an intuitive feeling about you, Mrs. Blaine. Nothing too definite to support it. I think you didn't care very much for David, but you had quite a passion for his checkbook.
What of it?
Well, for instance, you find yourself a mug. You make a deal with him. He holds you up. Gets your $200,000 necklace as payment. And takes a pot shot at David. You're the helpless wife. David's a very dead pigeon. You come into David's money. The mug disappears with his 200 grand. Very nice.
I could have had anything I wanted from David. To think I'd trade in a comfortable spot like that for an electric chair.
Maybe. Lots of people try.
You're wasting your time, Mr. Collins.
Oh, really?
Well, not that I mind. Being questioned by a very handsome detective is so pleasant.
You've changed the subject.
Certainly. You're much more interesting. Married, Mr. Collins?
Yeah.
Good. Makes it more fun.
Haven't you had enough entertainment these past few days?
Not of the right kind. You wrote my phone number in the notebook. Will you call me?
What for?
You amaze me, Mr. Collins. Some men have to be told everything. Of course, I didn't know anything about this at the time. If I had, I'd have scratched her eyes out. But keep your ears pinned, friend. We'll be back in a minute with more of our story. That night at home, Greg told me about the case. Only because he had to, as I found out soon enough.
Now, chum, you know my policy about keeping you out of my cases.
Yes, teacher.
For once in my life, you're going to come in very handy.
No, you're getting sensible. You have such a brilliant wife. I never could see why you don't use her talent.
Now, look, brilliant wife. There's a way to get at this guy who likes emeralds and target practice with millionaires.
And how do you do it?
With a decoy duck.
That me?
Mm-hmm.
What do I do?
We buy you a necklace.
Oh, this gets better all the time.
We buy you a cheap necklace.
I thought there'd be a catch in it.
We get our friend Nick Scudder to put a line in his column about the gal who's always at the Stardust Club wearing a sensational necklace. That ought to start our boyfriend who likes sparklers chasing around after you. He'll try to pick you up at the club.
But I'm hard to get, huh?
No, easy. Very easy.
This wouldn't be typecasting, would it?
To get the jewels you'll be wearing, he'd have to get you alone. He'll probably ask you to his place. You both go outside and get a cab.
Greg Collins, do you mean to say you're actually suggesting that I go to a nightclub, make a pitch at a killer, and then take a taxi ride alone with him?
It'll be a special kind of cab.
What's special about it?
I'll be driving it.
Sounds like quite a Halloween party.
It might not turn out to be so jolly, Gav. That's what I don't like about my little scheme. You see, somebody in this deal might...
Might what?
Might decide that your throat is a good place to put old razor blades.
We bought a flashy-looking necklace. Nick Scudder plugged away in his column about, quote, a mysterious girl seen every night at the Stardust Club with a rock-studded horse collar that could pay the national debt, unquote. Outside the club a few nights later, Greg was at the wheel of a taxi. I was inside the club, sitting alone at the bar. A very oily-looking Joe came over to me, smiled, and I knew this was our man. I fluttered my eyelids in the best Hollywood manner, and we were off to the races.
Don't tell me you're one of those awful people who likes to drink alone.
No, I'm just new in town and haven't made friends yet.
You've made one now. My name's Ben. Ben Fasoli.
Mine's Gail.
Mind if I join you for a drink?
Not at all. You always play the big bad wolf with all the Red Riding Hoods who come here?
Just the very beautiful ones. They fascinate me for more reasons than one.
What do you mean?
I'm psychic about them. Take you, for instance. I'll make a guess. I'd say you're married to a very wealthy man, much older than you are. You're sick of him. You're bored. You've come here for some excitement.
Go on.
That much was a guess. Now I'll tell you something I'm very sure of. If you're looking for excitement, lovely, you're shopping at the right counter.
I wasn't quite sure if Ben Fasoli was just being amorous, or if he suspected I was a plant and might suddenly give me the same treatment he'd given David Blaine. We stayed at the Stardust Club for about an hour. Fasoli hardly ever eyed my necklace.
He became more romantic and suggested that we go to his apartment. We stepped outside to hail a cab. A cab I knew would be driven by Greg.
Taxi!
Here comes one, Ben.
Great. Go ahead, Gail. Step in.
Where to, Doc?
1785 Bayside.
Right.
Nice to be alone for a while, huh, Gail? Just the two of us?
Uh-huh.
Gail, every minute I was in the club, I wanted to kiss you.
Ben, the driver can see us.
What does he care? Come here. Oh, Gail, I...
Did you say 1785 Bayside?
Yes, yes, I did.
Okay.
Gail, look at those stars out there. You see through the window? We mustn't let them go to waste. Just one kiss. Come close to me. Closer, Gail.
I don't think there is any 1785 Bayside.
I have reason to think there is, driver. You see, I've been living there for 9 years.
Okay.
Gail, honey, I never thought I'd be lucky enough to meet anyone like you. I always used to say to myself, deep in my heart, Ben, I said...
You think the Yankees have a chance this year?
Look, friend, just drive the car.
Okay.
And then when you walked into the Stardust Club, Gail, I thought for a while that someone might be with you. Then I realized you were alone. It took a lot of courage to come over to you. I don't know what I'd have done if you'd turned me down. But we're together now.
What's that?
That'll be 45 cents, thanks.
Come on, Gail.
Ben, I sort of a headache.
I've just the thing for you. Come on.
Oh, really? I think I better keep the cab and go home. I'm so tired.
You'll feel better when we get upstairs. Have some turkey on the ice, a bottle of Riesling.
Oh, thanks.
Don't disappoint me just for a few minutes.
No, I'm glad you heard the lady. She wants to go home.
Who asked you to get into this?
I invited myself.
You know, I've met some fresh cab drivers in my day.
But you? The lady has a headache, Ken, so she's going home. Now.
You're going to get real cute about this, aren't you?
Good night, pal.
I love to knock your teeth down your throat.
Ben, don't start a fight with him, please.
Come on, bud, let's play rough. Might I like your face? I think I can fix it up a little.
Why, you...
Ben, please. No one must know who you and I are.
All right, dear. I'll call you tomorrow. What's your number?
Oh, just meet me at the club. Same time as tonight.
Fine. Goodbye, dear.
Bye. Oh, you're the most wonderful cab driver I've ever had, Greg.
Thank you, ma'am. Where to now?
Just drive along the bay.
But we don't live out this way.
I know, but didn't you hear what the man said? You mustn't let those stars go to waste.
The fellow I borrowed the cab from is waiting.
All right. Cab drivers understand things like that. The next morning, Greg was just leaving his office. He was on his way to see George Trent.
Well?
Good morning, Mr. Collins.
Mrs. Blaine.
Do you have a moment?
Certainly.
I've been wondering about what sort of progress you've been making. Have you found any clues to the identity of the man who killed my husband?
I don't talk about my cases until they're cleared up.
I think I have a right to know what you're doing. After all, I was married to David.
Frightened, Mrs. Blaine?
Why should I be?
Afraid that what comes out in the wash won't be very pretty?
Not in the least.
I went to the trouble of looking into the details of your background, Mrs. Blaine. I wouldn't exactly call it nice reading for the kiddies. Shall I tell you why you really came here, Mrs. Blaine?
I want to know who killed my husband.
Mrs. Blaine, you came here because the life insurance company's ready to ante up with a small fortune now. You're his beneficiary. You're afraid I could prevent that by coming up with evidence that you might have done the killing yourself. You want to make sure I'll stay out of the picture?
You are going to stay out of the picture, Mr. Collins.
I'll tell you the next step, too. Now comes the pearl-handled revolver in the pocketbook.
When you get shot with one of those, you're just as dead as with the other kind. So help me if you stop me from collecting David's life insurance.
Threats are a dime a dozen to me. They're part of my business. I collect them like other people collect butterflies. Good afternoon, Mrs. Blaine.
Look, you two-bit keyhole peeper. If you and your junior G-man badge stand between me and a couple of $1 million, it wouldn't mean a thing to me to kill you.
I wonder if you're so upset with me because I might cost you the $2 million. Or because I froze up when you made a play for me.
It's for $2 million. As for you personally...
I said good afternoon, Mrs. Blaine, a long time ago.
You're underestimating me. You may not live to regret it.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Blaine.
Exit, Mrs. Blaine. And you know that corny bit about hell having no fury like a woman scorned. Well, sit tight. In just a minute, we'll bring you the climax of the case. That little interruption over, Greg went on to the insurance company's office to see George Trent.
I think I've got your man, Mr. Trent.
Really? Who is he?
He lives at 1785 Bayside. Smooth-looking chap. Tall, thin. Dresses very well.
Well, how'd you do it? Did you see the necklace? Well, how can you be sure?
I arranged a trap for him. Got him to go after a necklace my wife purposely wore to the Stardust Club.
Well, what are we waiting for? Why don't
we... No. If we fail him and grab him now, we won't have much evidence to hold him on. We've got to give him more rope. He's seeing my wife again tonight.
Is he connected with Cora Blaine, as I suspect him?
It's hard to tell. But give me another 24 hours, and I think we'll strike oil.
You mean we can arrest him within 24 hours?
Probably.
Excellent, Mr. Cummins, excellent. And now do be careful. The soul is liable to be very slippery. Yeah, how about Mrs. Blaine? Do we just let her wander around?
Yeah. Remember the nursery rhyme about the lost sheep? Leave them alone, and they'll come home.
That night, I put on a very slinky evening gown. I was getting ready for another session at the club. But Greg stopped me.
You're not going to the club, Gail.
Greg Collins! Just because you're going to close in on Fasoli, you're getting the willies. You're afraid I'll be hurt.
That's not the reason.
Then what is it?
Fasoli won't be at the club to see you. He's going to be late. Very late.
I couldn't follow Greg's reasoning at that moment. But as I learned later, Fasoli was at home just then, having a visitor.
1 second.
Sorry to keep you waiting.
What are you doing here, Trent? Why the gun? I didn't make no mistakes. Put on the gun. Put on the gun.
You did make a mistake, Ben.
No, Trent, no. I did everything you said.
But I told you not to kill anyone, Ben.
Blaine tried to stop me. He started screaming for the police.
And you should have beat it.
You told me to...
Where's the necklace?
In the dresser drawer. Here, I'll get it. Here's the necklace.
Thank you, Ben. Lovely, isn't it?
I didn't mean to kill Blaine. I just wanted to shut him up. I just meant to hit him in the leg.
You're very careless.
They're not close to me, are they? You know that dick you hired? Where is he? Who is he?
Collins. He's very close, Ben. Too close for comfort.
Well, what will he do?
The answer's simple.
Can you get me out of here? Get me out of the country, maybe? Till things cool off?
No, Ben.
Well, then give me my cut on the necklace. I know some people. They'll help. With 25 grand, I can travel fast.
You're not getting any money.
It's terribly dangerous
for me to have you alive, Ben. You get rattled too easily. You might say something that'd be very embarrassing.
Wait, Trent. Wait, listen to me. I don't want a cut. I wouldn't sing to Collins. I'll go away. That's all I want. I want to get away. You've got to let me.
Sorry, Ben. It'd be stupid of me to let you go. Wherever you are, you're a potential threat to me. We're wasting time.
No, don't shoot, Trent. Don't!
Drop the gun, Trent. Collins.
My hand.
Keep away from that window. I have more bullets, and I like playing rough, remember?
You're the cab driver.
That's right. I overheard your conversation, Trent. Ben wasn't half as careless as you were.
Maybe we can make a deal, Collins. What do you say? How about a deal?
Your company had an awfully high recovery rate on jewelry, Trent. And you insisted on not working with the police. That seemed rather strange. But you clinched it yourself the last time we talked. When I told you I'd found our man, you said, Fazoli's liable to be very slippery.
that I'd never mentioned his name.
I got plenty of money, Collins. Make it worth your while to forget this.
I purposely told you I was closing in on Ben for 24 hours. I knew you'd come here to see him. Get up.
How's 10,000? Cash right now.
Stand up.
15,000.
I said stand up. You too, Ben. I have that same taxi waiting for Zoli, the one we were in before. But this time, we'll all have a nice, quiet, smooth ride. This time, we have a police escort.
A few hours later, Greg had disposed of his two friends and had come home to his ever-loving wife.
Well, I suppose you're full of questions, as usual, Gail.
As usual. Trent had a very cushy spot figured out for himself, didn't he, Greg?
Surely. The lug steals the jewelry. Trent gets his company to shell out, say, $50,000 to get it back. Trent quietly splits it with his pal. The company saves a fortune. The gal gets her necklace. Everything's moonlight and roses.
What about Mrs. Blaine?
Just a hellcat. She wasn't in on this deal at all.
Okay, Bob. Now, how do we go about celebrating or solving the case? Want to go down to Fisherman's Wharf and have a seafood banquet?
Well, I don't know.
Head for Chinatown, have press duck?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
Got any other suggestions?
I did have something else in mind, yes. Hey, what do we have in the refrigerator?
Just some cold chicken. A couple of cans of beer.
Well, I stay right here and eat alone.
But why?
Because right here, the service is better.
Don't go away. In just a moment, we'll be back with you.
Well, folks, Ged and I hope you enjoyed our adventure, the fabulous Emerald Necklace. Be sure to visit us next time for another Puzzle in Murder, where there is crime and romance. There you'll find Mr.
and Mrs. Collins.
Welcome back. Well, this is another version for which the Abbotts take on the episode does exist. In the case of the Abbotts, it's episode 0356. Overall, I thought this was an interesting case with Gail, you know, actually being invited in. But Greg being clever, you know, about when she needed to stay out for her own safety and showed some common sense. Now, of course, we have heard about Gail's jealousy, but listening to this episode, we see Greg also has some jealousy of his own. And I did like the way he handled it as a very forceful Gabby. The insurance guy gave himself away, you know, in one of those classic radio mystery tropes where it's, you know, saying something. In this case, I thought him actually naming the guy he had hired was a bit much. But other than that, I thought an enjoyable episode. Well, now some listener comments and feedback now. Over on YouTube, Machiavellian Mystique reacts by saying, 9 minutes in, and this is already my favorite light series. Old dog, new trick. And then we had an interesting question come up on Twitter. I was watching the Michael Shane film from PRC, Murder Is My Business, with Hugh Beaumont as Michael Shane. And I recognized the plot of the movie was based on the book The Uncomplaining Corpses. And I got this question from a listener. There's a book series? And I guess I'll address this since we just played Michael Shane, but there is indeed a book series by Brett Halliday, who created Michael Shane. And there were a total of 77 books released. It was very popular in the 30s and 1940s. In fact, I read one fact online that Michael Shane books actually outsold both Philip Marlowe and Sam Spade in the 40s. But that may all be in part because there were, you know, a lot more Michael Shane books released. Shane is books are generally considered, you know, a bit obscure, you know, partially because even though they were very popular at the time, they're, you know, not, you know, great literary works. They are pretty solid detective novels. And I have read them, and I quite enjoy them. They're great for the period. They're not overly hard-boiled. If you want to, they generally have pretty solid mystery plots with some good characters. I do think some of the later mysteries, you know, when you get into the later 40s and early 50s, do tend to be a bit better. At the start of the series, Shane tended to do some goofy things that really just did not work in real life. And one of those was actually changed for the movie I'm watching. Now, he also, the same person on Twitter asked, you know, if these had been re-released. And they had, or when they last been printed. They had been recently reprinted, though, through Mysterious Press. Though, as far as I know, they just did ebooks for Michael Shane. They've done paperback for some other series, like they did Robert Goldsboro's Nero Wolf books, and they did paperbacks for those. But these were just ebook releases, as they have the rights. And you can find paperbacks, since they were fairly popular series. I bought actually six of them in a lot on eBay and used them as listener support thank you gifts. And in the meantime, read through all but one of them before somebody actually claimed them. If you have a Hoopla account or if your library has the Hoopla service, you can actually borrow the Michael Shane books through Hoopla at no charge. So plenty of ways to read those books, and if you like 1940s and 50s mysteries and enjoy reading, then this really could be a series that'd be worthwhile. Again, there's no great, you know, novel like a Big Sleep or The Long Goodbye or The Maltese Falcon, but they're all very entertaining and well-crafted stories. All right, I want to go ahead and thank our Patreon supporter of the day. Thank you to Steven. Steven's been one of our Patreon supporters since March 2016, currently supporting us at the Master Detective level of $15 or more per month. Thank you so much for your support, Steven. And if you'd like to join Steven and our 180 other Patreons, go to patreon.greatdetectives.net, and you can support the show for as little as $2 per month. That's actually all for now. Join us back here tomorrow as we get started with The Man Called X, and then on Thursday with Raffles. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.